Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Time for the second funniest podcast with your hosts, the Kevin Miller and Justin Wersch. Have fun, guys.
Well, thank you, Sam. Hello and welcome to the second funniest podcast. This is episode number 470. I'm your host, Justin Worsham, and with me, as always, is the one who urinates in... in controller screen entertainment.
What?
I really got to plan these out better. Really got to work harder. I don't know why, but I was looking at the word wee, and I was thinking like Scottish, like or take a wee, like whiz. And I thought it made you cool, and I unintentionally throw you under the bus. Although now I am just as entertained by the idea of of me coming up with these stupid things. And then and then backpedaling and explaining them. So that will also be my new thing. Anyway, either way, piss on whatever you want, Kevin. Jump and press the circle button is all I care about.
Thank you, Mr. Poops in his face, Worsham. Poops in his own face. Ever since having a kid, I say the word poop 100% more easily than I ever did before. Yep. I'm not a guy that thinks poops and farts are funny. But when you're like surrounded by them and they cause your child angst, you just like poops and poop and poop and fart and poop, poop.
I don't know why, but I had the image of one of you guys using the restroom and that causing Quinn angst. Like, oh, there's more poop. Like, and he's just crying.
Why?
I smell fecal matter.
Why does this happen? My wife thinks farting is hilarious. Always has. Like, I'm a very funny guy. I'm a professional funny person.
Yes.
And then I'll like accidentally rip one when I go to bend over to pick something out of the fridge, and she'll fall out of her chair laughing. I'm like, that's not okay.
You know what's funny is that Kevin, I would define you as being like the quintessential adult about that. That is why your wife is such a perfect match in that situation, because Kevin is the, like, he doesn't necessarily get red in the face about it, but it's very much like, but it's very mature that it's like that. Hey, that's a bodily function and that happens and we don't have to call attention to it. So it makes perfect sense that your soulmate would be like,
You farted.
Now what I'm waiting for is the tear in the space-time continuum that happens when you bend over to pick something up and you let out a little toot, and then when she laughs, she doubles down on the farting because the expression of her laughter makes her fart, and then her head explodes. And we all enter like a Sliders type storyline where we jump around into the
good reference.
The greatest farts in history.
My brother and I love that show Sliders too much.
Oh, it was great.
Show. And the
early
seasons were great.
Did you just say it was a terrible show?
It went off the rails big time. It got weird. Cro-Magnon Earth and stuff. It just got bad. But we would entertain each other for hours, as children often do, by taking turns walking around the corner, flipping the light switch on repeatedly, and then coming back and noticing something wrong with the room. And so the person that was sliding, flipping the light switch, would come into the room, and the other one of us had to do something to make it like a different universe. And it often resulted in like sitting upside down and being like, what? This is normal. This is how we always sit. The best one is when the best, I'm very proud of this. In fact, my brother and I to this day will still reference this. I reset everything in the room and I'm just sitting there looking at watching TV. And my brother John comes into the room and I go, hey, what's up? Eric. So to this day, we'll say, oh, hi, what's up, Eric?
I wish I grew up with you guys, because then I would want to be like the Quantum Leap guy. And just every time you said Eric, I'd be like, oh, boy. And this has been early 90s TV shows.
References. And now The Simpsons.
Oh, damn it. That's funny. Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's no real, I guess maybe Toe Jam and Earl. Like, I was trying to think of a video game that employed fart humor.
There's several.
Really?
I would have to say. I think that's not an
maybe
uncommon.
I don't play enough games that are in that. I mean, like the games that I guess that there's probably elements of that in like your Grand Theft Autos, you know what I mean? But it's more like of the crude nature. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, just like a cartoon fart. Like, I want to giggle at a video game in the same pure, innocent, childish joy that your wife giggles at your bunghole whenever it makes a sound.
Yes.
I'm sure everybody who listens to the show, but the best part about this image of you telling that story is your sweet Catherine's face. Like, just nothing about her visual appearance makes her look to be a person. She looks like Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. Like, she looks like that kind of
that's one of her favorites.
I know. So. When you said she loves Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, I'm like, yes. That the glasses, everything looks like this is a modern day. If they reimagined Sherlock, like they do Sherlock Holmes, but did it to Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and she was, you know, a college graduate, lady about town, working girl who's just trying to, you know, not making it in the frontiers of America, but just trying to survive in today's concrete jungle, then it would look like Catherine Miller. And so the idea of somebody pooting on set of Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and just her breaking hysterically just makes me happy.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think of games that have a lot of fart humor in them. I don't think it's very popular right now, but I can remember Abe from Oddworld. That was
That was like loaded. That was like the crux of that game. I forgot.
And it's a beautiful game.
Yes.
That's the thing. It's like gorgeous.
That was like,
by today's standards, you're like, that is a good looking game.
Right. Yes. And, that was the whole thing about it. It was like almost Final Fantasy-esque, like in the movie. Like, it was like, holy, look at what they did. Yeah. I need to buy those games on my Vita because I want to go back and see what they look like and see. Because you know how you remember what a game looks like, and then when you go back and look at it, you're like, oh, yeah, this is crummy compared to what
That's what happened with Sonic the Hedgehog. I remember when we plugged in that Sega Genesis and Sonic ran across the screen, I thought in my head, he cannot move that fast. There's no – that cannot be right. And I have since
no processor can process the speed of Sonic the Hedgehog.
He's moving like twice the speed of Mario. And now I'm like, oh, look at that. He's barely moving. Things are barely passing by.
That's good times. That's good times.
Last time we were together, I said I had a revelation in video gaming.
That's true.
And I'd like to recap. We've been talking about video games on this JK show for 2 years now.
We're not calling it that anymore.
My bad. And so we've been doing this for almost, it'll be 4 years of our awesome podcast next month. And we've been, or in 2 months, I guess, December. And it's in November, next month.
Yeah, you're right.
And so half of that time we've spent talking about games almost exclusively. Mm-hmm. And half of today's episode about farts. So that's about right.
Right on par. Right on par.
And I think there are some conclusions I think I have come to through our constant pontificating on gamings. First of all, I think the fact that games are built on franchises is kind of a thing that we stumbled upon that I think is a key to the industry that I don't feel like we talk a lot about. People give Hollywood crap for not coming up with new ideas, but then don't go see movies with new ideas in them. And I think the same thing is true within games. I think it's the angst that Nintendo was trying to describe at E3. You want something familiar but different. Everything, name any popular game of this year, and it's not a new franchise. It's either an existing title, a sequel, or a game built on a movie or an outside franchise outside of outside of the gaming industry. What say you?
I agree. I think it's unfair to say that I am a part of that. That is something that you entirely noticed and brought into the show. But I agree wholeheartedly because I remember trying to think of games and we were just like, it was a lot of dead. Let's see. I'm wondering why it is that there isn't that culture though in video games that I don't really think that the culture with it, and maybe it's the nerd culture that likes, it's like that thing that Nintendo said at E3 that they like, you like the same but different.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't really think there's this outcry like there are that there are people in pop culture like, you just, are you kidding? You're making Battleship the movie? No, man. The Lone Ranger? Seriously? No. Like, there isn't that vibe in video games.
Who says that about the Lone Ranger? I mean, come on. Trust me.
But, you know, like, I think that I think it's because of the society or the culture of the nerd isn't one to say, yeah, it's a weirdly traditional culture. Like, I guess that they like things to keep going and little, like a little pinch, little Emerald Agassi of saying, hey, boom, crank it up a notch. There you go. Guess what? It's got a new graphics card. You're welcome. Hey, right. Here's free to play. We invented that. That kind of thing.
The second thing that I think is true within the gaming industry is the fact is that element that people want to the part of it that says we want something familiar comes from the truth that many gamers play the same game to death.
Yep.
That's why they have to build in these ridiculous platinum level trophies and things where you have to dedicate 100 to 200 hours. Now, certainly there are elements of the game, and my point here in a minute, I'll tie this together and why these are both the same coin. There are other gamers that don't want to beat a game to death. They just want to play it, experience it, and move on. Justin Warsham.
Boom.
Play the game, beat it, sell it, get a new game. Play the game, beat it, sell it, get a new game. Then there are games like gamers like Bradley who want to ace every level in a Little Big Planet 2 and want every trophy possible, go for the platinums, and spend 400 hours playing a 6-minute demo of Sly Cooper 4. So how is it that we have an industry with people with both of this to satisfy both of these things? And I have the answer.
Oh boy.
And I didn't come up with the answer. I discovered the answer in what I am now calling the greatest game that has ever been made. And
you know what I want?
I
really want this like podcast to be like a historical document, and I want this to be like your like Marxist manifesto almost. You know what I mean? Aside from the genocide and the horribly bigoted values, I just want that to be, I want this to be the changing pivotal moment that we're looking at it right now. And other than me, this will be me calling it like, even Warsham knew is what they were. But other than me, people are like, nobody knew.
The episode is entitled Manifesto and Farts. when this episode goes down in history, and my prophecy is foretold to be true, future generations will have to listen to the first 10 minutes where we discuss gas.
No, the message boards that live in their eyes will say, skip to minute 13 or 14 when he goes into the manifesto. It's not worth the fart stuff. Since farts have been outlawed since the year 2087.
They don't need them. They transfer the methane gas into usable fuel.
For those of you who haven't passed third grade yet, you will not know the moment in history when gluten was outlawed and farts were no longer an issue.
So, the greatest game ever made will be the model for future gaming. That once somebody within the industry discovers this, it will transform the way we game. Because the other thing that we've mentioned, so I did have 3 points, and this should have gone earlier, is that there are really two types of games, and they're all called games. There are games like Madden, Chuzzle, NASCAR, any of the sports-related games mm-hmm. that are actual games that are, there's not a, the element of the interaction is our system of rules.
Yeah.
Then there are games with stories in them, and those would be Assassin's Creed, Red Dead Redemption, Portal, where they have the game of it, in quotes, is to interact with the narrative that's happening. Now, then there, a lot of these two silos can be cross-pollinated through different platforms or different games will borrow from both these sides. You see racing games with a story narrative in it, like Club Midnight, or you see narrative games with a lot of mini games in them, like Sly Cooper 3 is when you break it down, really comes down to an awesome platformer stitched together with really clever mini games. Mm-hmm. So those two arenas exist. And it's the second one, the story narrative, the games that I think will shift. We'll always have these games built on games where the, you know, it's about tower defenses and that's mm-hmm. SimCity, those sort of games. So the best game ever made and will change the face of how games are is Infamous Festival of Blood.
What?
And that's the
you're telling me that some DLC is what and it's already out?
Yes, Justin.
What?
As many of you may know from the Facebook feed around Halloween time, I went back in time to 2010 and loaded Festival of Blood. If you haven't played it, it's a must buy. It's only $5 on the PSN right now, so give me a break, get it. You don't need to own the previous Infamouses for it to live on your hard drive. It's a smallish game. It probably maybe takes a total of, I don't know, 4 hours to beat at the most. Like,
that's
if you really wanted
five
to power
bucks.
What's that?
That's not bad for $5.
Yeah, exactly. Not bad at all. And that's like enjoying it. I mean, if you tunneled down and really tore it up, you probably could beat it in 2 hours, like if you really wanted to, like a film. But if you wanted to enjoy it and try to get all the little credits and the awards and max out your powers and that sort of thing, maybe 5 hours. And then there's plenty to do afterwards as well. If you do beat the narrative, there's little awards to get. But the thing about the game is that it's small, which is good. And the story moves very fast. Every level has something. You typically, these AAA games that we love, that mm-hmm. I love, spend so much time on the narrative that it's like an epic film. You know, to the point where like it gets stretched so far that by the time you get to the end of the game, the story has become so epic that they have to take it off the rails in order to top what they've done in terms of crazy awesomeness. There's several games that go down the side, but the time you get to the end, you're like, oh, this is very big. Like, this is nuts. And then you got MMORPGs that like Star Wars, where it's just never ending. You're just constantly building on these stories, and there's no arc, there's no storyline that goes in it. Infamous Festival of Blood is a film. It is a 2-hour movie, and it has a simple arc. It has a simple trajectory. You don't get lost in the story. They're not referencing random characters that you saw in one scene in the beginning of the game. It doesn't, you know, even the Uncharted games, as brilliant as they are stretched so far, and you're so concerned with just the action that you lose perspective of what you're supposed to be doing. That doesn't happen in Festival of Blood, because it's just real simple. Stop being a vampire by daybreak. You have 8 hours to break this curse, and in the meantime, you're going to be a badass vampire. and then there that allows Sucker Punch really does well with in these Infamous titles is creating these really dramatic 15-second interactions with the game. And gosh, without ruining some spoilers, I really think that they do some clever thing. They ask the player to do some very clever things in the last scene of the game that are super simple, but so dramatic. And I think the crux of it, what really puts it apart from any other game I've ever played, is the fact that a narrator narrates the action as it's happening, which is a convention movies and television have been using forever, decades and decades. And I can't recall a game where regularly, as you're playing, just a narrator will pop up and tell a story. Like Arrested Development or How I Met Your Mother or, you know, any movie, you know, it was at this point that this character started feeling this. Typically, when you're playing these games, you run around and you blow stuff up and then you get a cutscene and you have to sit and put the controller down and listen to the watch the cutscene that they put together. And then you get to reapply your personality. And this, you're doing stuff. You're trying to make your way across the map or you're beating somebody up. And he's and Zeke is narrating the inner monologue of the character, or giving context and color to the universe.
So while you're playing, these aren't cutscenes. This is while the game is happening.
And it'll happen at random moments, too. It'll be like, you know, it's not like cutscene, not every time is it always cutscene, then monologue. It'll be cutscene, you'll start playing, and then 60 seconds later, he'll just break in as you're playing, which is a much more clever way of doing the, you know, even in the previous Infamouses of trying to find the carrier pigeons with the information, or in the Arkham games of finding the audio tapes and playing them as you're playing to create like a little depth to the game. This is just, it's just color that's stretching on top of the game. And it's freaking brilliant. Now, this is why I think so. That element, plus the fact that it's small, and it's built on a map that that already existed. That, and we've talked about this before as well, or the fact that. Well, to sum it all up, is that you watch a TV show, right? Cheers is an old example, or a newer show, not a single camera show, like, or even I guess The Office would fall under this line. The Office takes place in pretty much the same set 90% of every episode, and you don't get bored watching it. You're not expecting them to go to another location because it's about the characters and what they're doing. It's about the story that happens in there. And then there are elements of it where you actually begin to really love what they do with the room, like, oh, remember when this happened in the annex, or remember when this happened in Michael's office, or in this very spot, this part of the story unveiled in a previous episode. So they took the same level, this one chunk of the map from the Infamous 2, and put this whole story on it. And they added one new set, which is this underground cavern that stretches between two points in the map. And that's it. That plus some new characters, new character models, and a little tweak in the gameplay, and they were done. So what I'm proposing is, imagine a world where instead of purchasing one new Infamous game every 2 to 3 years with an epic arcing storyline of 100 plus hours of gameplay in it, you download a new episode like a comic book or a television show every month to 6 weeks to 2 months with a new story where story is king, and with, you know, maybe a new villain and maybe a little tweak on the power, or maybe not. But the point is that it would be like a comic book, like a film. And that way we satisfy a TV show. And that way we would satisfy both sides of the coin. Both types of gamers get engaged with this sort of model for games. You see the people that want to beat a game to death get new stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. The people that want to play a game and get bored with it quickly get new stuff all the time. So there's always a reason to be playing the game.
And what I would imagine is that this would create a world where instead of needing a $60 investment, or, you know, $50 to $60 investment for a game, it might be closer to $20. And then you can just keep building on and add on. And instead of it being like a peak, it seems like most games, you pay $60 for the game, and then there's some kind of $5 to $10 DLC that'll come out. And then that's about it. You know, that seems to be where things kind of cap off.
For the sequel, imagine instead you play Infamous, and then now, you know, like around Christmas, it's holiday season in San Marin, or what's the name of the city in Infamous? Maria Del Rey.
Maria Del Rey. Yeah, you're right.
No, I don't think that's it.
Sure, I'll look it up while you keep doing your manifesto. Then
I manifesto. It's like, I want more. I want the next chapter in the story. I want the next episode in to see my superhero. Just like I get to read about what Batman and the X-Men do, I want the next chapter to see what the Human Lightning Bolt Cole gets to do. And it was great because it wasn't the same villains. It wasn't dealing with the same story. It wasn't dealing with the same tension between everything else, because it doesn't have to wrap everything up into this epic filmic proportions. It gets to be one episode in a bunch of stories. And so episodic gaming is the future of the industry.
I agree wholeheartedly. And it's New Moraes. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, New Moray.
New Moray. There we go. I like that. I like the idea of it. I think that the only thing that would hang that up, that I don't know, maybe you're more aware than I am, is that, you know how, like, right now it seems that the developers, and if only we could get some on this show once a month, the way a co-host promised. But
wait, me?
No,
what did
me.
I do?
That was me. That was all me. I'm a loser, baby.
Matt Kramer is spinning in his grave right now.
He's like, I told you guys, and you promised. But the idea that, you know, how it seems like they work, and they work, like, you know, 15-hour-plus days for, you know, 6 months, and then, you know, they get a little bit of time off before they move on to the next project. I wonder if this doesn't lend itself to a more effective, like, it's almost like a television show in production, in that, you know, they work for 4 or 5 months, regular 8-hour days, because it's a smaller game, but they work consistently throughout the year, because every quarter they're coming up with a new product.
And you plan it out, just like a TV show. You go, okay, we got our pilot. I've got the first 12 episodes, one to be released every 2 months. As you're developing it and tweaking it, you're coming up with character designs for the next episode. You're building any necessary sets, props, or any changes in the game mechanics. Mm-hmm. You even build that in. You know that 6 episodes down the line, you're going to give your character a new power. And then you get better. Instead of building one game over the space of 2 years, you build 12 games, smaller bite size, but with the same scope and focus, and you would just get better. So the last episode of a season or a series would be incredibly stronger than the first. As a consumer, there's several ways you can imagine interacting with this, either buying a season pass. You want all done, you just get the whole season pass, buy the whole game for a certain price, or you download each game as they come out, each episode. And this allows people to pick and choose. Oh, I missed this month's episode, whatever. It allows more flexibility. It taps into the microfinancing content that we see work so well in mobile games. Mm-hmm. And it expands a library for a downloadable content, and it takes the power out of the hands of the retailers.
Yep. And I think that's the only issue that would have blocked that, is that the technology of being able to download a video game, or even a chunk, like with the advent of DLC and it being embraced in the way that it is, or at least embraced by the developers themselves and the hardware, mm-hmm. that it makes it easy. Because that's the thought that I was just thinking, was like, I'm like, well, the only problem to that, if I'm the guy who has to make the game, is that, well, now I have to get an artist to design new artwork for a new disc and a new box, and then there's marketing teams that have to sign off and legal that has to sign off. But there's a lot less, just like me as a comedian, it's much better for me for people to buy a digital downloaded copy of my disc, because once I set it up once, then the expense is done.
Yep.
And then it's just a matter of maintaining a website, I guess, it could be an expense that's associated with that. And then I get charged a fee for every one I sell, so I just have to cover that. But as far as the cost effectiveness of a digital culture is great for me as a content provider. And I would imagine that they're looking at it the same way. And broadband is pretty sweet, and it's looking awesome, and that makes it even easier. And I really like the idea, too, of – like getting into a world like Assassin's Creed, where instead of only having, instead of having, like, I don't know what it is off the top of my head, say 10 to 12 hours, which I know seems like a lot to exist in one little timeline of, you know, Desmond's ancestral background. I like the idea of being able to do maybe 1 or 2 hours. And then digging even deeper into what's going on. And maybe instead of them being able to, you know, they could use a finer brush instead of a roller in painting these worlds and stories, because there is kind of, I think, a blanket effect that they have to be able to do to make a game that is that of that scope. Does that make sense? You know, am I making sense?
That was well said, sir. Yeah. Well said.
And that you could get into the real, like, kind of minutiae, not necessarily make the tasks, you know, more like Sims-esque, and like it's exactly slice of life where you're just living the day-to-day thing. I'm answering the telephone, like that kind of stuff. But I'm saying, like, you could get really deep into some stories and really see some characters' relationships develop and grow, and even get to build, like you do in a sitcom or even a drama that you like to watch. You develop this love, excuse me, and connection with these characters.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'd say. That's the benefit of it, is to actually connect with people. And it's not like it's not like we're coming up with this crazy idea. This is what television does. Mm-hmm. This is when you pitch a TV show, even an outlandish expensive one like Battlestar Galactica or Star Trek series, you do this. Mm-hmm. And so I know that it's capable. I know that it's possible.
And I do agree with you that I do think that is the future, and I do think that there is that separation. I would like to even see it extend, for me, at least in a game of Madden or NASCAR. Like there has to be, I think, a certain limitation with those games when they, like, develop an engine change.
Yeah.
But for a lot of years, the only thing that was really updating was the rosters. And everybody would have gladly played $2 or $3 for an updated roster during the offseason. And, yeah, and so I think that, you know, they were forced into saying, well, we've updated the franchise mode and blown your mind with new things, because otherwise it's like, wait, remember that game you played for the last year? Well, now you have new rosters.
Buy it.
You're right. And then also there was a snag in the sense that they couldn't just say charge $8 for an updated roster that you could just, you know, download onto your memory card, even the PS1 days or whatever, because then they have to justify their jobs. Like, they all have to be there developing a Madden game, and it can't just be some guy who's a data entry guy who's, like, changing names and putting up a new number, you know? Like, there's new stuff that has to... So they're like, well, we can't just pay you to develop new rosters and come up with new people to be in these Madden games, so you have to come up with something that changes the game itself. Whereas in your world, the world you're describing, is that it frees us up. It frees us up to... Even in a game like a NASCAR or a Madden, to talk about, like, those games within games or those sports that I love, is that there can be updates that I would gladly save my $50. Like, say Madden right now. Say Madden 2013 is where it's at, and they have nailed it. I would gladly pay an additional $10 just to update the rosters and bring in the actual college draft class. Or it even gives you the opportunity, I bet, that they could say, okay, here's what we're doing. We've generated the draft class for you as DLC. So you can import them into your next draft when you have it. Or we've done it for the next 4 years. And it's like it's an added bonus content of, you know, you could subscribe to it for, you know, almost do like a World of Warcraft mentality where you do it for $10 a month. You can always have the updated, you know, you could keep building your franchise mode into 2015 or however you want to do it. Or you could buy it as we've updated the draft classes and go from there. But yeah, I'm excited about your manifesto. I'm a big fan of it, farts and all. All right, that's our show. 408-228-4911, or send us an email to show@secondfunniestpodcast. Join the conversation on facebook.com/secondfunniestpodcast. Tell us what you think of Kevin's theory of episodic and DLC, and instead of it being like this huge chunk of a game, that you get your little bite-sized morsels, and much like you wait for the new season of Fringe, you have to wait for this. What were you saying, Kevin? I'm sorry. Tastier morsels. I don't think I can play the theme song when I have you on Skype, because
all right, I won't talk. Go.
No, you
love
can
you,
talk.
Bye.
Okay. Follow the show on Twitter @secondfunniest. You can follow me on Twitter @JustinWorsham. And I think that's it. On behalf of my good friend Kevin Miller, this is Justin Worsham saying, okay, bye. Oh, it's silent now.